BBC Radio Ulster with Walter Love.
And you're very welcome to Jazz Club. This week, two important singers representing the best of American and British jazz. Nanette Natal's new album, I Must Be Dreaming, is a collection of her own socially conscious songs which take a critical look at American society today. And in the final segment of the programme, Claire Teal, that lass from Yorkshire, who's created a huge following for her jazz interpretations. We start with Nanette Natal.
I've got the state in my body, I've got the church in my bed. I hear the voices all screaming, they'd be better off dead. Let's put them all in quarantine, let's get them all out of here. Although the message is frightening, the message is clear. Don't pick the wrong color skin, don't pick the wrong color love, don't pick the wrong color skin, don't pick the wrong color the haves and the have-nots. There's a division here, and it's control that they're after. It's control through fear that feeds into our self-hatred, that feeds into non-belief, that keeps you locked in the closet, that throws you out in the street. Don't pick the wrong color skin, don't pick the wrong color love, don't pick the wrong color skin, don't pick the wrong. There is a power in people, there is a power in people that cannot be denied. We must learn to stand together, we must stand in pride. Don't close your eyes, don't turn away. Don't keep your head in the sand, or soon we'll see a master group. Or soon we'll see a master group. Or soon we'll see a master group. To take command. Look, you've got the wrong color skin. Look, you've got the wrong color love. Look, you've got the wrong color, my mind. You've got the wrong color set. Look, look, you've got the wrong color skin. Look, 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 you've got the wrong color love. Look, 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 you're the wrong kind. You're the wrong kind, you're the wrong kind. Look, you're the wrong kind, you're the wrong kind. Look, 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 you're the wrong kind. You're the wrong kind. Although the message is frightening, although the message
message is frightening. The message is clear.
That was Nanette Natal with Colours from her new album, I Must Be Dreaming. I'm delighted to say that she's joining us this evening from New York. Nanette, how are you?
Oh, wonderful, Walter. It's great to talk with you.
Well, it's been a pleasure, and I've been looking forward to this for some considerable time. Now, we'll come to the title track in a little while, but I wanted to choose Colours first of all, because that's a lovely accompaniment that you provide on piano.
Thank you. It's simple.
And it's also, of course, the piano is only one of your instruments, isn't it?
Yes. I started out, actually, many, many years ago playing guitar. And when I first started performing, I played guitar and sang and sort of a singer-songwriter type of thing, very blues-oriented. And then I put the guitar away when I got into jazz so I could just really focus on my voice. And I spent more time with the piano and really more time composing from the piano. But I never really perform with the piano, so this is kind of a first.
Now, writing songs with a strong social message is very central to what you do, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, I'd say that this album is just much more specific in terms of its political intention. I've always had a political bent in my work and certainly in my personal life, but I think the message was more about the individual, you know, in other words. We all make better citizens when we are more intact ourselves. So in other words, the more in touch we are with our own sense of self, we can give more out to the community, we can give more out to relationships and to each other. So I think my politics were always about the individual, you know, in other words, the individual being the collective ultimately. In terms of the music that I put out, my personal politics is something else. But I think that just in the climate that we've been living in these last number of years, I felt it very necessary to really speak out in a very specific, explicit way. And that's what I've done with this album.
Is music a good way to deliver a message? Do people listen, in other words?
Well, you know, I think that an artist just, you know, you just have to speak out and express what you feel. It's what I do. And I just couldn't do, I mean, the last album I did before this was an album of ballads, and they were my tunes, and I was very happy with them. And, you know, it was nice to do that. It was easy on the ears. It was very easy for people to accept also. This is not the case here with this album, even though it's very early on. The U.S. response has been very lukewarm and in some ways outright just not responding at all, not programming it at all. And it's interesting, and Europe has been a totally different experience. Europe has been very embracing, and I totally understand why, and I'm sure your listeners understand why too. But an artist has to express themselves, and I just felt like I just couldn't do an album of standards after that, or I just had to do this. Also, I've been working on some of this material for some time, some of it, and honing it down, and I'm involved in co-producing a documentary on activism, so some of this music is going to be going into that work as well. But I just had to say it. I just had to say what I felt. I mean, I Must Be Dreaming was released last year because I really wanted to get something, the single, I mean, I wanted to get something out in response to, I think Katrina was the episode that really put me over the edge in terms of I have to say something. This is what I do. I'm a musician and I'm a songwriter, and I just can't just do an album of bebop tunes or something right now. I had to say something. So it really stirred up all that in me, and I ended up putting together the whole album this last year.
You have a very good interreaction with your audiences in live performance, haven't you?
I'm an emotive person. I'm an emotive performer. I really connect with an audience. I don't, you know, it's not about turning my back to the audience. I mean, it's different when you're a singer because you're singing words, and words evoke emotion, and sound evokes emotion. And so it's very important for me to have a personal connection with the audience, and I work hard to create that, and I think I'm successful in that.
Does that help in your skills as an improviser? In other words, if you're on stage in front of an audience,
yes,
that you respond to how they're responding, and that maybe helps improvisation.
Yes, it does help. It helps with improvisation, and it helps just in general to feel connection. You certainly need that feedback. But in improvisation, you kind of go into another zone. You have to really let go. So ultimately, you have to trust yourself. I think my ability to improvise comes from a lot of early years of playing to audiences that weren't receptive and taught me to just be very strong and centered with myself, regardless of whether they were really there or not, you know, listening or not. Because when you improvise, you have to have a very grounding trust within yourself, and then because you're letting go. You're completely letting go. And then it's great when an audience responds, but initially, to just be able to be in that place, you have to be able to just go off on your own and trust that it's all going to be okay.
You started as a classical singer, but by what process did you move into jazz?
Well, first of all, I started singing very young. So I was in my early teens when I really started singing out there. You know, when I was first coming out, I was doing sort of art songs and classical type music, and then I evolved within a couple of years of really coming out and working with a dance band and doing Tunes of the Day and so forth. And then the progression, I was always writing songs, and then I started, and I always was playing guitar, and then I started doing my own material along with rock material, folk rock of the day. We're going back a while now. And I really kept going with that and ended up really having the beginnings of my career as a singer-songwriter in a rock blues vein and had a measure of success with that, but had a great deal of frustration with the business of music because I was really always testing the reins and always wanting to grow as an artist. And the more commercially involved I was with record labels and so forth, it made it very difficult for me to do that. So I was always making choices about my career early on and because I wanted the freedom ultimately to grow as a musician and to grow as an artist more than I wanted to just be a pop star. So those early years, you know, had their ups and their downs for me, but I was out there for quite a while performing and recording, and, you know, I see all my old albums on eBay, you know, and doing a body of work that wasn't exactly what I was about because I wasn't really completely free to express myself. And then at some point, I started to realize that I took a break from it all because I was very unhappy with being as a musician. I was unhappy. I mean, I was doing well financially and all of that, and my name was out there, and I was playing, you know, all over the place. But it just wasn't enough. It was like I didn't have the freedom of my art. And then I just started not working, you know, just taking a break from it and realizing that I was going into another direction, that I had sort of been going in that direction for quite some time. I guess the blues into jazz was an easy enough segue. And it was jazz that I was really leaning toward. It had to do with improvisation. It had to do with stretching. It had to do with not necessarily having this conformity of a pop formula, but more freedom to explore changes and ideas. And that was a happy day. It was a very, very happy day, Walter. It was the beginning of a new life for me, even though I'd been out there professionally for 15 years. It was like jazz, the day that I understood what jazz was a very freeing time.
Let's take another song from the album now. Apple Pie has a title which is very homely, isn't it, in a way? Mm-hmm. Tell me what's the thinking behind this song?
I guess it's a bit of a, you know, sardonic tune, you know, it's comedic, you know, with a black side to it. I mean, what it's really about is that our world has gotten so conscious with power and, well, money, first of all, money. Everybody is always so concerned with money, and everyone is. I mean, whether you have a lot of money or you don't have enough money, either way, we're all concerned with money. So you have people that are struggling because of money, that they can't make ends meet because everything is, there's not enough money. And then there are people that have so much money and it takes them over. You know, they equate power with money. And we're living in a time right now where it seems to be that celebrity is everything and power is all about money, not about spiritual groundedness, not about humanity, not about humans. You know, people are not equated with power. Power is about acquisition. So the tune is a play on all of that. In other words, the truth is that if you don't have, you know, it's sort of saying, you know, I've got mine, you've got yours, we've got it all together. Let the fool stand in the rain and face the stormy weather. You got to have money. You have to have money in this world, and that's what you got to have. And don't be a fool about it. You know, so it's playing on that kind of sarcasm because that's a lot of what we live in. This is a very commercial world, and of course, I can only speak for the States, and it's unbelievable. It's all about acquisition. It's all about advertising, and so the song is really talking about the division in this country, and probably in the world. But again, I can only personally speak about the U.S. and the division. And there are those that have, and there are those that don't. And the idea is that people get very frightened also when they have a lot because they don't want to lose it. And so then, you know, you stick with what you've got. You wear blinders in a certain kind of way. And that's what I think that's why also we have the kind of political climate that we have in this country, because there are a lot of people that were very blinded by not wanting to risk what they had. I've got my stuff, and that's all I care about, and I don't want to lose my stuff. And that's what matters. Let's keep the financial stuff intact. So it's talking about that. It's talking about division. It's talking about greed. It's talking about also the emptiness, the complete emptiness, and I guess ridiculing that extreme of just looking at the world that way, that is what the world is about, to own things and to have things. And that is not what it's about. It's about humanity. It's about people. It's about the power of people. But it's playing on all of those things.
I got my DVDs, my MP3s, I'm across America's plains. I got a four-wheel drive, it pushes me hard into the fast lane. I can't take life easy, can't take life slow. I could charge on a plastic card. I do believe in the rights to my own backyard. I've got pie, a great big piece of the pie. I got pie. Apple pie, ooh la. I own a high-rise co-op, looking on the up out to the 26th floor. I never cook at home, my search is on for a five-star restaurant. I got CDs growing, signs are showing, success is what you see. I do believe, not a thing's gonna happen to me. I got pie, a great big piece of the pie. I got pie, apple pie, ooh-la. Yeah.
money. We die for money.
Nanette Natal singing her own song, Apple Pie, another song to think very much about. Nanette, your frustration with the music business and your independence of mind led you to create your own Benyo Music, your own
That's
label.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That gave you a lot of freedom, didn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when I was talking before about the record labels, I did. I reached a point where I just had to end my contracts in that particular world, and I didn't know what I was going to be doing. And when I found jazz, I wanted to then, you know, just run with that. When I was a novice at it, but I had the feeling for it, even so. And then I created a series of tunes, which really became my album, My Song of Something, which was my first jazz effort. And and one of those tunes, It's Over, really had a lot of popularity in the UK and in Japan, and still is sort of, I don't know, it's in like in jazz dance clubs and stuff. But I shopped that around a little bit and realized that even though I thought now with jazz I'd have a lot more freedom and a lot more control, it wasn't quite like that either. I mean, there were also certain limitations that you work with that in terms of record labels. And since I had come from so much restriction and you know, lack of creative control, I went the route of setting up my own label in 1980. And now everybody does that, it seems. You know, I mean, it's great. You know, people can independently produce things and put them out. But at that time, that wasn't really the case. I mean, it was just an independent label was quite an established label at that time. But I had some good advisors, and I went ahead and did it, and it was the best thing for me because it gave me that edge. In other words, look, I could go around and shop an album and see if a label wanted to distribute it, and I'd get wider distribution and so forth. But if it didn't work out, I didn't have to compromise the music. And I could take responsibility for what it was that I was putting out. If it was good, you know, great. If it wasn't received that well or whatever, I mean, it was my effort. And I made my effort, and I was financially responsible for it. And so I set up the label in 1980, and the first release was My Song of Something, which did quite well and actually still does well.
That's very good, isn't it, when people still want something that came out a number of years ago. It's still valid, still current.
Yes, yeah, and it's interesting because now with the Internet and this instant response, I've learned so many things about that particular record also, and in terms of its interest with a lot of DJs, and it's had this sort of underground celebrity, you might say, or underground, you know, I mean, there are an awful lot of DJs in the UK that know It's Over. And I didn't really know that until a few years ago, how popular it was. I knew all my vinyls were selling out, but I wasn't sure why. So now I know.
Can I ask you about the contrast between working in the recording studio and working with an audience?
Well, obviously, I mean, you're in a more controlled environment in the studio. And then you don't have an audience. And of course, you know, as you said earlier, I mean, an artist does feed off of an audience, for sure. But there are things that you can do in a studio that you also can't do live as well. So the thing is I work, though, the way I record, it's as close to a live performance as you can do. Because, well, first of all, I work with Malcolm Addy, who is just a wonderful, he doesn't like to be called an engineer, but he's a recording artist of his own. And, you know, he's one of the rare guys, because he goes way back to EMI and way back to, he's originally from London, and, you know, he worked with George Martin, and he knows the old way of doing things. And we record analog. We record live, direct to two-track, which is hardly ever done and is really, you know, even the tapes are sort of phasing out. But I do that for a reason. I do it because, and what that means, if the audience doesn't know, it means it's just the way people recorded in the 60s and 70s and the 50s and whatever. It's not digital. Our recording in the moment, so that if you're recording live to two-track, it means that what you're recording, there's no overdubbing of it. There's no, oh, we'll fix this in the overdub or something like that. There's no overdubbing of it. The machines are going right into, they're mixing on the spot. So that means whatever you're doing in that tune, that's the tune. And if it doesn't work, then you do it again. But there's no fixing it. So it's as close to a live performance as possible. Everything is, you know, there's no, I don't overdub my voice. There's no track where I overdub my voice. We're all doing it live as if it were like a club setting. And then it's recorded that way. And that, it's an interesting way to work. I like to work that way because it's risky. And I like that. I like risks musically, you know. And it puts, and the musicians are prepared for it, and they know that they've got to give their performance as if it were live. And what you get from that is a certain edge. You get an edge that is very similar to what a live performance is. There's a certain energy that you're working from when you know this is the cut. And if you're not there with it, if you're not present with it enough, you have to do it all over again. We can't just splice in a bass line or something like that. So it gives a very live feeling to it. Also, I tend to have a lot of space in the music, and when you're recording analog, you get the ambiance of the sound, which you don't quite get with digital, you know. So the ambiance gives it a certain kind of presence also of liveness and intimacy, and that's what I try to go for. So the recording studio for me is as close to a live circumstance as you can get. The only difference is you don't obviously have that audience there responding to something that you're doing in the moment.
Now, that jazz education is something very important to you. You've done a lot of work there. That is very important, isn't it?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think it's important because of what jazz stands for, in terms of individual expression, individuality, and you know, I teach privately, and my classes are known for being about a lot of things besides just vocal technique, because I think that's an important aspect. In other words, it's really about the individual. I mean, with jazz musicians have to get in touch. Well, all musicians have to get in touch with themselves deeply. But again, that element of improvisation, you know, there's places you have to go, and you have to be able to be opened up and take certain kinds of journeys with yourself. So in order to do that, you need a strong foundation of self. And I try to provide that for my students as well, so it's not just about whether they're going to study jazz or not, but jazz history and just a general history of, I guess, you know, my classes go through political science and politics and emotional journeys and, you know, spirituality, and, you know, it's the whole picture, because a musician is it's not just playing that instrument. It's the whole way that you see the world, and then how you see the world is then comes out in your instrument, whatever that instrument is. I work with people also that are not just singers. You know, I work with other musicians as well, guitarists or bass players or piano players, and just work on musical ideas and elements that, you know, if they're blocked creatively, opening up creatively. That's a lot of what my teaching is about. But I think that I think jazz is very important because of what it represents, a certain kind of freedom. Real jazz represents a certain kind of freedom. And now jazz is a very coined word, so it's almost hard to know what jazz is in some ways, because it's very it's like a brand, you know, and it's used in commercially in a certain kind of way. But the real roots of jazz is about freedom of expression.
I think a very good way to finish our conversation, it's been a pleasure talking to you on Jazz Club, will be to lead into I Must Be Dreaming, the title song. This is a very, very powerful song with a wonderful, lovely bass introduction, which really sets the scene, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, and that's Tony Cimarosi on bass, and he's a wonderful guy to play with. He's just a fine musician. I Must Be Dreaming is a very personal, you know, it's obviously a personal observation, and it's truly how I feel and been feeling for a while as I've seen the world change and my world change and my country change or the ideals change or what I thought things would be and are not. And it's about, I guess the essence of it is about poverty here in this country. I mean, I think this is also why, you know, I mean, there's a lot of, again, it's very hard. It's very painful for people to open up to the truth. I mean, you know, this America. America's, you know, has everything, and it does. It has so much, but it's gone astray, and we have to look at our fragilities. And in this country, we have to look at. I mean, there's a great deal of poverty in this country. There are a great many people that are doing without. There's not enough concern about the children here, you know, the children of the world. Children are not protected in the way that they need to be protected. We're not providing for that. So I Must Be Dreaming is talking about, again, the division, you know, but really about poverty, about children, about America in a very, it's not a colored pretty way, but it's what I see. It's the fact that that's why the title is I Must Be Dreaming. I can't believe what I see on the streets of America, and it shouldn't be, not in this country, not in this country that has so much, you know. But there are those that have, and there are those that have not, and there doesn't seem to be a sharing of that. But it shouldn't be. So that it's also about that, and then it bows to Katrina as well, and that's, you know, that's what put after Katrina, that's what put this song together for me. I had bits and pieces of it, but then it all came together when that horror took place, and the fact that an American city just almost disappears, you know, and that's not a priority for this administration. You know, this is terribly wrong. It's terribly wrong. And so, you know, then I must be in a dream, right? I mean, this is America, and we all have everything. It's the streets are paved with gold. Well, for some, but the streets are hard out there, and it's just imbalanced. So, you know, again, it's personal. This is all personal. I'm not speaking for everyone. I'm speaking from my own observations. But those are my observations.
Relieved of state assistance,
people meet such resistance. They fight hard, but still they can succeed. With so many factories shut down, farmers who've been let down, we all mourn the death of our American dreams. He's 14 years old, selling his body and his soul, and they buy, yes, they buy. She's not quite 13, a hard-hitting queen, doing anything she can to survive. I can't stay out of it, it just isn't right. There's no use denying the cry in the night. We can't live our lives blinded by the carnival lights. Swept by the cold that curled in the night, fighting the sounds in the air. I'm not sure when the night took flight, but they've made the streets their bed. It's time to rejoin the world outside. You better go ready or not. They were stripped of their sense of themselves and their pride. They were robbed of all that they've got. I must be dreaming. I must be dreaming. Streets, on the streets of America, look and see what you find. Look on the streets of America, you won't believe your eyes. Look on the streets of America, look and see what you find. Look on the streets of America, you won't believe your eyes. I must be dreaming. I must be dreaming. I must be dreaming. I must be dreaming. Hard if it doesn't come easy. You've got to understand that here living's hard if it doesn't come easy, and we've all got to lend a hand. Here living's hard if it doesn't come easy, we've got to take a stand. Because here living's hard if it doesn't come easy, and the government don't give a damn. I must be dreaming. I must be dreaming. I must be dreaming. I must be dreaming. On the streets of America, look and see what you find. Look on the streets of America. You won't believe your eyes. Look on the streets of America. Look and see what you find. Look on the streets of America. You won't believe your eyes. The muddy waters. The old, the dying. Hungry children, the muddy waters on the streets of America. The muddy waters on the streets of America. Of America. Hey, hey. The muddy, 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 muddy waters on the streets of America. Hey. The hungry children, the hungry children, the hungry children in America. On the streets of 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 America.
The title song from Ninette Natal's album I Must Be Dreaming. It's on Benio Music. The number is BY3341. Can I just remind you that Lindley Hamilton has After Midnight in a little while, winding up another sequence of 6 hours of music on BBC Radio Ulster. And of course, you've also got the Listen Again feature on the website. Now, I had a letter the other day from Lawrence Hutchins of 37 Park Hall Road, Antrim, and he's a dedicated fan of Jazz Club. I'm delighted to hear that. Thank you for the comments about all the programmes you've been listening to over the years. And he says, maybe you give me a wee mention in the programme and play a Claire Teal number. Well, I'll tell you, Lawrence, I'll do a little bit better than that, because I think I've neglected Claire Teal recently. So for the remainder of the programme, I've selected some music from two of her albums, That's the Way It Is and The Road Less Travelled. Claire is from Skipton in Yorkshire, and she's been steeped in jazz tradition since her earliest years, particularly falling under the influence of the singers of the 30s, 40s and 50s. She's studied the techniques and the phrasing of masters of the art, particularly Ella, Sarah Vaughan and, of course, Louis Armstrong. And she alternates between singing her own songs and dipping into the repertoire of earlier times. This is one of her own.
Well, there's some high and mighty people in this big judgmental world. They got morals to which they must aspire. But these high and mighty people, they find it so distressing that everybody's messing with fire. Well, you told me lots of stories. You said, look, but do not touch. Well, babe, we all do things we don't admire. So don't sit there and plead with me. Just hush your mouth, take heed of me. 'Cause everybody's messing with fire. It's a certain kind of hunger that I guess it's hard to name. But you'll know when you start dancing to its tune. And it's true, there's always something somewhere waiting to burst into flames. This is holier than thou. Look who's got the matches now. See all the people carrying secret dreams. Look at all those hearts out there for hire. Well, look at all those creeping hands that never learned their lesson. 'cause everybody's messing. History books have told us that since this world began, oh, so many fingers have been burned. So who are you to tell me how to live my life right here and now? Take a good look down this list, baby, we're all arsonists. You called me Satan's other child and said I'd burn in hell. But sugar plum, I know you're just a lie. 'Cause God gave me his blessing to keep you people guessing about everybody messing with fire. 'Cause everybody's messing with fire. Who everybody's messing.
Claire Teal messing with fire and getting away with it too. Trevor Whiting was on clarinet, Neil Solberg on guitar, Martin Litton the pianist, Richard Jeffries on bass and Rod Brown on drums. Now from her other album, we'll alternate them, The Road Less Travelled, she has a very special guest on one track, and this is Jamie Cullum.
More than the waves in the ocean,
more than the clouds in the sky,
more than a nerve needs emotion,
I love you more than the reasons why.
Higher than a kiss from an angel,
prouder than a proud mother's pride,
richer than ambrosia and nectar,
swifter than the turn of the tide.
Break free and take the road less traveled, where time forgets the time,
where worried souls can begin to come unravel, to reveal something fresh, something pure, something so, so alive.
A beginner,
slyer than a cat with a creed,
stronger than a god craves a cinnamon,
brighter than the brightest sunbeam,
bigger, better, brighter, faster, sharper than a world-class invention,
prettier than a falling star.
You know you are braver than a man with the best of intentions,
wiser than the people who live just as they are. Live long, live free, down the road less traveled, there's no guarantee but strive to give yourself a little time to unravel, to reveal something fresh, something pure, something so, so alive.
The Road Less Travelled there, Claire Teal with Jamie Cullum. Well, going back to the That's the Way It Is album, here's one of the standards from Cole Porter with a lovely work from Trevor Whiting on tenor on this, Night and Day.
Like the beat, beat, beat of the tom-tom when the jungle shadows fall, like the tick-tick-tock of a stately clock as it stands against the wall, like the drip-drip-drip of a raindrop when a summer shower is through. So a voice within me keeps repeating you, 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 night and day. You are near to me or far, it's no matter.
silence of my lonely room, I think of you night and day.
And another standard to finish the programme tonight, Blue Skies, again Claire Teal with her familiar musicians, Martin Litton on piano, Mark Crooks this time on clarinet, Neil Solberg guitar, John Day on bass, Rod Brown drums. Join me again next week, if you will.
Blue skies smiling at me, another but blue skies do I see. Blue birds singing a song, another but blue birds all day long. I never saw the sun shining so bright, never saw things going so right. Noticing the days hurrying by, when you're in love, my, how they fly. Blue days, all of them gone, another but skies from now on. sky smiling at me. Another of a blue skies do I see. Blue birds singing a song. Another of a blue birds all day long. Never saw the sun shining so bright. Never saw things going so right. Noticing the days hurrying by. When you're in love, my heather fly. Blue days, all of them gone.